Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by nobody, and I'm recording this mailbag podcast a day later than I usually do. I usually prefer to do those on Monday, but we are here. You are here listening to this on a Tuesday. I got sick. I don't know if you guys can maybe hear it in my voice. I got sick, and you guys would not have wanted me to record, given how I sounded yesterday. We have, as always, a ton of questions. you guys just keep on killing it. So I'm just going to dive right into it. We have some stuff about, you know, which player I would prefer between Damian Lillard, John Wall, or Kemba Walker. We have some stuff about Sfi and who he might remind some of. We have some stuff about Pete's metaphor about the cows. Was really popular last week. So we have a ton of stuff to get to. As always, you guys know where to find the show. Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, and Silver Screen and Roll. You can follow me on Twitter at Anthony Irwin LA. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Lakers. Let's jump right in here to the very first one. This comes from Sam the Oil Man. Will LeBron want Deng to play with the team? I can't imagine. I mean, look, the weirder things have happened. Apparently, he wanted to play with Lance Stephenson, right? And apparently, he wanted to play with Michael Beasley, and he wanted to play with JaVale McGee. So, and Rajon Rondo. So, you know, I guess weirder things have happened. But I think one Lakers executive, according to Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report, said that Luol Deng is basically in some kind of pseudo retirement, and that makes sense. It was funny. I was talking to Caron Butler about this one time, about how in situations like this with Luol, where the team doesn't really expect him to play, they don't really even expect him to stay out of shape. Like, how do you usually handle that as a player? And he had some interesting stuff that he said there. And basically, the big thing is, look, if the kids on the team are open to your mentorship, then you mentor. If the guys on the team want to be pushed in practice, then you push them in practice. But most of all, most importantly of anything is just don't create problems. And that's kind of the one good thing that we've seen here from Luol Deng, is that he's just kind of, as frustrating as I'm sure it's been, he's a competitor. He's gotten to this point in life by being a competitor, but he seems okay with just not creating problems. And we didn't see that necessarily from Timofey Mozgov. We haven't seen that from Joakim Noah in New York, where those guys are frustrated and they want to get out there and play. Luol Deng is just—he just wants to do what's best for the team, and in this case, it seems like what's best for the team is for him to continue to sit down. Next question comes here from Vontae35. Regardless of cap ramifications, if the Lakers could trade for one of the following players—Damian Lillard, John Wall, or Kemba Walker—who would I choose? Oh man, that's a tough one. If you're talking regardless of cap stuff, I mean, it's kind of tough because Damian Lillard is making, I think, twice as much as Kemba Walker. So it's hard to not have to factor that in. I would order those three as Lillard, Walker, and then Wall, given what this team needs. What this team needs from their point guard is shooting first and foremost, so that's why I kind of like Damian Lillard and Kemba Walker over John Wall. You need somebody who is good defensively, so Wall, being as fast as he is, would be kind of nice there. I really like Kemba Walker. He's the cheapest of those three guys, so he seems the most attainable, and that's going to be something to watch as this season goes along. We had that one executive say that if they come out of the gates a little slower than they expect, then they can make a deal at the trade deadline. Kemba Walker, I've kind of sort of circled him because of how much he makes, because of some of the fit stuff, especially if LeBron is really adamant about moving off of the ball. Kemba Walker would make a ton of sense there too, even more sense. All three of those guys are really good players, but I love Damian Lillard's attitude about the game, the FU constantly, you know, while also being productive. John Wall, to me, just seems like an R&B singer. Like, I hope somebody understands what I mean there. But he does a lot. He said today that they were going to talk less out there in Washington this year than they did last year, which is good considering they talk so much and were repeatedly humbled. But I just really like Damian. I really, really like Kemba. All three of those guys, if the Lakers were to add them to the team, I think we would really like how that team would round out. We're going to take a quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to talk about Josh Hart. This is from Omar017. After seeing Josh Hart in Summer League, is his NBA ceiling still a 3-and-D player? Do you see him as a sixth man or even an all-star? So let's get to that. All right, so again from Omar17, basically, do I rethink things? Do I rethink what Josh Hart is capable of, having seen him play in Summer League? You really got to be careful there. And I'm going to sound like a downer here, but you got to remember, it's like that. I remember Major League 2 was the movie, and Omar Epps' character, who used to be, oh man, I can't believe I'm forgetting that, but Willie Mays Hayes basically walked into training camp or spring training and was hitting everything out of the ballpark. And one of the assistant coaches went up, or like the bench coach went up to the manager and said, "Hey, look at Willie out there. He's hitting everything over the fence." And the manager basically replied, "Well, yeah, let's see how he does next week when the guys he's hitting against, he's batting against, are bagging groceries as they should be," basically. And that's kind of the thing with Summer League, is that you see a lot of guys who frankly are not NBA players. And so Josh Hart looks great out there. And we'll see if I think a lot of what he was doing can kind of translate over. It's like Pete and I talked about in that show with Svee, is that a lot of the things that Josh Hart was doing, it was a matter of how he was doing them, not necessarily just the counting stats that he was attaining. The pull-up jumpers, some of the creativity for others. He obviously is always going to be a really good finisher at the rim. He kept that going. So a lot of the things that he was doing out there seemed like they could transfer over into an NBA game. I just don't know if I want to rethink his role based off of a couple weeks of really good play. And here's the other thing too. You need really good role players. Like if you want to have a really good team, you need to have guys who accept their roles and are productive in those roles. And maybe eventually they grow out of them, or they stretch the boundaries of those roles because they continue to improve. And that'd be great to see from Hart. But my favorite thing that I've said this a couple times, but my favorite thing from Josh Hart's time in Summer League was not necessarily just the stuff that we saw on the court, but the stuff he was saying off it and heading into it, right? Where he said that he wanted to dominate, not just from a counting stats perspective, but from the standpoint of every time the Lakers were on the court, and he was on the court with them, that you knew that they were a better team because he was out there. That was always the case, and that was great to see. He called his shot, he backed it up, he did everything that he could. I just want to see that transfer or translate into an actual NBA team, and then we can start to rethink things if absolutely necessary. Next question here comes from McNugget2483. I've seen a lot of hate on Isaac Bonga on social media. Are players from overseas allowed to sign as undrafted free agents like colleges players from the States? If so, why not draft another player and sign Bonga as a UDFA? It didn't seem like other teams were going to draft him due to him being shut down, based on what I read. All right, so the stuff with players coming from overseas, for one thing, and we saw this with Zubats, and now we saw it again with Bonga. Players are more adamant about coming over sooner than they've been in the past. It was based on the stuff that I've seen, it was easier to draft and stash in years past than it has been lately. And you have a lot of guys going later in the draft than they necessarily should, just because the team that they are being drafted to isn't quite ready for it. Maybe there isn't a spot available, or they don't think that the player is ready. I was surprised that the Lakers brought him over and signed him to use a roster spot. and not a two-way player spot on Bonga. They did so, I guess, because they wanted to have him in-house and closely monitor his development in-house, which, fine, that's their call. I just don't really see it with Bonga. He's young, and we'll see, but the athleticism stuff is legitimately scary to me, and it's the lack of explosiveness laterally, vertically. If he gets a head of steam going, he's not slow. But he's just that kind of stuff. He doesn't shoot the ball well enough to make up for that. Like, Sfi is actually quicker on an NBA court because guys have to close out so much harder to him. Bonga isn't going to have that, and all the travels that he kept on having, like, that was because the game was too fast for him, which is to be expected given how young he is. I think he's the youngest player in the NBA, but he's a project. And the Lakers don't really have time for projects right now. I think that's why you're seeing them draft guys who are a little older. Sfi was a four-year player, even though he's a little younger by those standards. Josh Hart was a little older. Kyle Kuzma was older. Mo Wagner was a little older. And you're seeing guys who are a little bit more developed so that there's a chance, theoretically, that those guys might step in and be more ready from day one. I was kind of surprised that they went with a project in Bonga and brought him over as quickly as they did, just because that forces him to have to develop maybe a little faster than he's ready to. So, you know, maybe he turns things around. He's really young, so you never really know. But as of right now, I'm not really a big fan of the pick. We are going to take one more second here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about somebody who, this is from Flocka Len, they think that Sfi kind of reminds them of Manu. I'll think about it, and then I'll give you guys my thoughts on who Sfi kind of reminds me of. So, like I said, this is a, hey, Anthony, are we allowed to compare guys who shoot with different hands with each other? Am I crazy for saying Sfi plays like a young Manu? All right, so Manu's tough because his game was so weird. Like, Manu is on the starting five of guys who shot you just never thought were going in, and then the ball just found the way to the basket, right? And he was tricky. He had great footwork. He is a basketball genius. So you see that stuff. I don't really see it necessarily with Sfi. I don't really see the comparison there. I think he's more, and others have made this comparison, but he reminds me a lot of like young Kyle Korver. He's not as long as Kyle was. Obviously, he has a negative wingspan, and everybody has noticed that. But he reminds me, he does a lot of the same things that Korver does, being a positive team defender. He has zero conscience whatsoever, which is my favorite thing to see from shooters, that as soon as the ball hits their hand, their feet are always set and their hands are always in position to just catch and shoot. I really like watching that. I really like watching Sfi play in that respect, just like I love watching Kyle Korver play like that in that manner as well. JJ Redick kind of comes to mind here too. Ray Allen, though he isn't nearly the athlete, obviously, that Ray Allen was, people don't really realize how athletic Ray Allen was. Yeah, those kinds of guys there. Now, I don't think he's going to be as good as those guys. Like, Ray Allen is a Hall of Famer. Kyle Korver is not a Hall of Famer, but I believe he made an All-Star team. JJ Redick is not a Hall of Famer, but he's one of the greatest shooters that the NBA has ever seen. So I think if he reaches anywhere near those ceilings as the 47th pick, then the Lakers struck gold again. But we'll see. We'll see. And look, it's like I said earlier with Josh Hart. It's not just the actual stats that Sfi was hitting. It was the way that he was hitting them. The off-the-dribble stuff, the crazy catch and shoot coming off of picks kind of stuff. Like, the stuff that we were seeing from Sfi makes you think that it can translate over, and really that's all you can really hope for. It's going to be interesting to see as this year goes along if how desperate the Lakers get for shooting, if Sfi can maybe get some minutes, take some minutes from Lance, especially after the trade deadline. Hopefully after the trade deadline, some of those expirings get moved for a better piece, and if that does happen, maybe Sfi can see a little time or injury force him into the lineup. One thing I do know for sure is he's going to light up the G League in moments that he's ever down there. Just watch. He's going to have some gaudy, like, 8-for-11 three-point shooting nights down there in the G League, and that's going to be really fun to watch as well. Let's go for a couple more questions here, and then I'll send everybody out on their way out. This is from PM1. Really enjoy the podcast. Woo. Every morning I look for a new episode. Do you think the Lakers are saving their last roster spot for Chris Bosh? Do you have any info on Bosh's health? That's from Patrick. All right, so obviously they are no longer doing that now that they have added Michael Beasley to the team. Look, here's the thing with Bosh. He's maybe one of my favorite people who have ever played in the NBA. He's just one of the nicest people that you'll ever hope to meet. And as such, and really for anybody, and it didn't even matter, it wouldn't even matter if this wasn't the case and he wasn't one of my favorite people out there. I suffer from heart problems. I have an abnormal aorta. Every so often I get the abnormal palpitations, like all those things. And my mom, when I used to play basketball, always said, like, her biggest fear was what happened to Hank Gathers. He just goes down and he never gets back up. And so with Chris Bosh, his health stuff, once you start dealing with health issues, heart issues, especially at the size that he's at, it's just not worth it for him to go out there and try to risk it and play. It really isn't. He's such an incredible dude. He's on the Mount Rushmore of guys I would like to have on the podcast. He's just such a nice guy. It would be absolutely effing devastating if he went down a la Hank Gathers. And I just don't think it's ever worth it for anybody to really give him a look until doctors clear him to the absolute nth degree. And that just really rarely happens with heart stuff because it's hard to fix that. Once you start messing with heart stuff, that can set off any kind of chain reaction, and it's just not worth it for Bosh. He'd be an absolute perfect fit with this team. The Lakers need a stretch five capable of the stuff that he was doing, but that's mostly because he'd be a perfect fit for any team. He's one of the all-time modern centers. Let's go with, wow, we have a lot of questions here. Let's go rapid fire. This is from Anu08. Did not want LeBron originally, but that was because I thought he would try to approach the team building to the same way he's done with the Cavs. Blah, 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 blah. I'm sorry, guys. That's a really long one. I'll come back to that another time. I've been a Lakers Nation lifer since I've known basketball, early 80s. Love the show. As for the team's current roster, the five position doesn't sit well with me. Should we possibly trade for Whiteside? No, absolutely not. he's a locker room cancer. He is not somebody you want in a locker room that hopes to win basketball games. What you need from guys really in the NBA, and it's an underrated, I guess, skill at this point, is self-awareness. Like, Carmelo Anthony completely lacks self-awareness. Hassan Whiteside completely lacks self-awareness. And when you have somebody who's making as much money as Hassan does, who is as talented as Hassan is, like, you need him to also be aware of, all right, I sound ridiculous right now. And he just doesn't have that. And I don't know if he ever will. It's getting kind of late in the game for him. And here's the thing with the center position. And it's going to be really interesting to see how this all plays out. But maybe the Lakers, and this is what Pete and I talked about a few days ago, maybe the Lakers looked around at the league and said, we aren't going to waste extra roster spots on super tall centers who might not be able to contribute. And they kept Zubats because he's cheap. They went with JaVale because he's a minimum guy, and I actually really like what JaVale might be able to bring to the table here. But it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. You might see Michael Beasley play the majority of his minutes at the five, just because of the way basketball is played in 2018. And Hassan Whiteside, unfortunately, is a little behind the times here. He's not very good in switches. My big concern is always, with bigs, as soon as I start hearing any kind of motor issues or drive issues from big guys, I usually just phase them out. That kind of stuff scares me, because guards can't get away with not having a motor. They just fall by the wayside and that's it. Bigs can stick around because they're so big, and because they are used to being need for such big guys. And it seems like a recipe. Like, I don't really like DeAndre Ayton for a lot of these reasons here. It's just like he scares me with his motor stuff. And once you start dealing with motor stuff with bigs, like, that just winds up they tend to demand a ton of money, because you look at them and you say, we need one of those guys. Maybe the Lakers are realizing, maybe they might be a little ahead of their time in realizing, no, actually, we don't necessarily need somebody with that skill set. We don't need to devote a ton of cap space to that kind of player. So that might be interesting to watch there. Let's go with from Canon 5D2, talking about the Lakers draft picks. Look, it's kind of funny the way that the draft stuff and the stuff that the people who are involved with their scouting, the stuff that they look for compared to the stuff that they look for on the free agent market, seem to be really different. This is something that's kind of been in the back of my head for a little bit now, and it's kind of funny the way that it's kind of played out with guys being acquired by a free agency versus the guys who were acquired in the draft, is that the two things that they're looking for are really, really different, and the backgrounds that they're getting these guys from are really different, it'll be an interesting trend to see how that moves forward, especially as more and more of the cap is hopefully devoted to superstars. Is what does the front office favor, or what do they prioritize in free agency once the amount of cap space that they actually can use starts to dwindle because of how it's used across the rest of the roster. There is one thing that is almost indisputable here with this front office, and this dates back to when Mitch and Jim were running stuff, is their draft record is pretty phenomenal. And maybe they don't have the crazy great hits at the top of the draft. You know, they don't have a Ben Simmons on their roster. They don't necessarily have a Joel Embiid or even a Jason Tatum or a Donovan Mitchell right now. But they do have guys who they aren't busts at the top. Lonzo Ball is not a bust. Brandon Ingram is not a bust. And then what they've done is they've been able to bolster those picks or bolster the roster with guys like Kuzma, guys like Hart. Maybe they did it again with Svi. Maybe they did it again with Mo Wagner. Like, that's a pretty incredible job that they've done drafting stuff. If I can't criticize something, then you know they're doing a really good job. So that's been really fun to watch. And the cool thing about building in the draft is that you get to watch those guys develop. Like, that's why it was kind of a bummer when Randall was just kind of shown the door, or when he demanded to be shown the door, was that, like, I wanted to see where Randall's career goes. And yes, I can technically still watch it in New Orleans, but it would have been fun to watch that take place out here in LA. We'll see how that turns out moving forward, but hopefully we'll be able to watch, you know, the Josh Harts, the Kyle Kuzmas, the Lonzos, and the Ingrams. Like, it'll be interesting to watch how those guys' careers take off now that they can work off of somebody as great as LeBron James is. This is from Nick Batchelor, friend of the show. Hey guys, do you like the mixture of veterans and young players that the Lakers are going to be having competing? I do, to a certain extent. And this to me is the number one, I guess, concern heading into this year is, are the veterans going to be okay as their roles diminish? Because the young guys, I want to make sure I'm saying this correctly, are the veterans going to be okay with how their roles play out as the coaching staff and as the players realize that the young guys actually fit more naturally with LeBron James? If they aren't open to that, and if they start to really gripe about that kind of stuff, sure, you can release them, but that was a waste of an offseason, right? If your explanation for why this offseason may not have been bad beyond, obviously, like the only explanation why it wouldn't be bad is because they got LeBron. So it's like impossible basically to have a bad offseason after you do that. But if your explanation as to why this might not be, why those signings might not be bad is, well, they can always release them. Well, great. Like that's like, you know, I bought a Ford Pinto, and if it breaks down, it just breaks down. Like, well, why'd you buy the Pinto in the first place? Right. And so with these young guys and with these veterans and with still a young coaching staff, is everybody going to be on the same page here? And as we get closer to the season, that's the number one thing that I think Laker fans should be watching for, is how does the coaching staff handle this mixture of veterans and young guys, and how do the veterans handle, yes, you want to compete and competition can bring out the best in everybody involved, but how do they handle the Lakers organization prioritizing? Hopefully they prioritize the right guys, but if they do prioritize them, how do the veterans handle that? That's going to be something to really focus on. Last question here. This is from Tommy Rainville. Thank you for answering my question last week. Blah, blah, blah. My question this week is simple. If we don't get Kawhi next year, which of the top free agents will fit best with the team? All right. The simple answer here is Klay Thompson. If he becomes available, he fits perfectly with the Lakers roster. You can let KCP walk. Josh Hart can still come off of the bench, and you go into next season with Lonzo, Klay Thompson, Ingram, LeBron, and a five, or Kuzma and LeBron as your, I guess, quote unquote death lineup. Like he just fit. He being able to shoot the ball, being the defender that he is on the perimeter, being how much he's willing to just, how little ego he has. He's just cool with showing up, shooting a bunch, and going home. Right. I Klay Thompson might be one of my favorite players in the entire league. Maybe of the same ilk, Chris Middleton kind of comes to mind. That'd be kind of an interesting move there. But those kinds of positions, if the Lakers can get themselves a shooting guard / small forward who can switch up and down defensively and knock down three-pointers, like that's what they really need next year. The nice thing about Kawhi Leonard is that he can do that and slide all the way down. In theory, depending on, you know, the matchup, he could slide 1 through 5 and defend 1 through 5. He's one of the best defenders that the NBA has ever seen. So I would obviously prefer to go with Kawhi Leonard. And then if the Lakers are able to move Luol Deng next year and not take any money back, they can go with another kind of 20 to 25% max guy and really look good heading into the summer of, or the season of 2019-2020. That would be fascinating to watch how that kind of comes together. But Kawhi is a priority, then Klay Thompson, then I would say Chris Middleton, and then you kind of go from there. That'll do it then for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. While I still have a voice, I'll be recording with Pete tomorrow, so you guys get to look forward to that. Maybe we'll get another analogy as we go into the offseason. I'm gonna try to find more evergreen stuff to talk about. One of the things I might be thinking about doing is having Pete and I go head to head as GMs and draft different versions of Lakers teams and stuff like that. So really fun offseason coming up ahead of us. We're going to be moving back to 3 shows a week starting this week. So sorry about the off days in between here. But there's just less stuff to talk about. And if stuff develops, you guys know I'll hop on this mic and give you my thoughts on that stuff. Have a great rest of your day. Thank you guys for sending in those questions here to iTunes. Anything that comes in the form of a 5-star review, that gets answered on the show. There were some that I left here because they specified that they wanted it answered by Pete and me. So we'll get to some of those maybe tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.